Hello, Oakwood family. Hope you're praying for Christopher Card and myself today as we are up north at Camp Barakel. Christopher's leading worship, and I'll be speaking to the teens from both East and West Side. So Colton Rodella is there playing drums, and Cass is doing our visual technology. So we've got a good team up there. Missing you guys, but serving the Lord. You guys are blessed this morning to have a guest speaker. His name is Pastor Doug Schmidt. And I wanted to just say thank you to Pastor Doug. I appreciate him. You might not know this as a church, but I get to meet with Pastor Doug and three other pastors local once a month. We get together at Doug's house and we get to talk about serving Jesus and what that looks like as a pastor. And he is such a blessing. Pastor Doug is the former pastor of Woodside Church, and he served there in many years, but now he's doing something that I just see is so great for churches, and that's encouraging pastors. He has a Barnabas ministry that I'm sure he'd love to tell you about. It encourages pastors for ministry. So Oakwood, we're blessed to have Pastor Doug. Pastor Doug, I hope you enjoy the great family at Oakwood. It's going to be a great day. God bless.
Not many guys are like your pastor who can talk without moving his mouth. That was cool, wasn't it? I'm going to enjoy talking to him about that tomorrow. We're on a retreat together. I did serve with my wife at Woodside Bible Church for 28 years, and then a couple of years ago, a friend of mine passed away, Dick Sochacki, who headed up Barnabas Ministries, a ministry to encourage and bless pastors. And so we took on that responsibility and then transitioned into it full-time just a few months ago. But it's a ministry where we're just going to come alongside pastors. The statistics are alarming. Perhaps you've heard some of them, where about 50% of pastors don't make it to their fifth anniversary in ministry. They'll quit before that. Somewhere between 1,000 and 1,700 pastors will quit ministry every month in the United States. And so the futility rate, the frustration rate is very, very high. And so when we got into this, our idea was just come alongside, encourage, and provide resources. And we ran into a common theme among pastors. And most pastors were saying, I need a mentor. So we began to look at mentoring programs and materials and began a mentoring program for pastors. We have 46 in it now that hopefully will double here in the next couple of months as we've trained and are training other mentors to come alongside, not to coach, not to counsel, but just mentor life on life to help us all as pastors lead more like Jesus. I'm thrilled to have Pastor Don in that one of our groups. It meets once a month on a Tuesday morning from 8 until 10, and God is doing some amazing things through these groups. You've got a great pastor. I hope you know that. I was a pastor for a long time, and the best gift I think I ever got from people was this little notes that say, I pray for you every day. May I encourage you to do that for Pastor Don and his family. Just pray for him. But every once in a while, write him a note or send him a text and just say, love you, praying for you today. It'll mean more to him than a mug from Oakwood. So. I am delighted to be with you. My wife and I live not too far from here, just south of Ortonville on Allen Road. So, a couple of drivers and a wedge from here probably. So we've watched over the years what God has done in this place and very excited about the future and what's going to happen here. I want to talk to you this morning about God and how he intervenes in our lives. Do you believe that he does? Yes. Do you believe that he does? There are some who don't. The deists believe that God created the universe and then wound it up like a clock and then step back, and the universe was a closed box, not open to any supernatural intervention. So God didn't intervene, and we're on our own. It's pretty hard to swallow that one, isn't it? I was listening last night to the story of Esther. When King Ahasuerus was there, and one night he couldn't sleep, but you go back a little bit, Mordecai, a man chosen by God, was set to be hung on the gallows of Haman the next morning. That night, the king Ahasuerus goes to sleep, And while he tries to go to sleep, he couldn't sleep that night. You remember the story? He couldn't sleep. And so he said, bring the chronicles, the history books of the events of that region. And they brought him, and he opened them up to the page where it talks about Mordecai and what Mordecai had done, and realized he had never been properly rewarded. The next morning, it was just the opposite. Was that just a coincidence? I don't think so. So this philosophy, don't believe it, but don't live like you believe it either. God intervenes in our lives. There are other people who go to another extreme. They'll say, as they're driving into the Kroger parking lot, Lord, I need a spot by the door. Right by the door. Right next to handicap. Lord, I know you can do it. And sure enough, you pull around to that first row, and there's a truck pulling out right next to handicap, and you pull in. You say, God answers prayer. Is that the way God answers prayer? I'm not saying he never does that. But that one's pretty hard to consistently claim, or certainly hard to explain when people pray for God to heal them from cancer over and over and over and over, and he doesn't answer that prayer the way they want, while God is supplying you a parking spot by the door to Kroger. Are you with me? So maybe we need to step back and say, do we have what is our God like? Is our God powerful enough to intervene in our lives, or is there anything in our lives that's too big for God? I was golfing with a friend here a few years ago, and he was standing over a 3-foot putt. And I was trying to get into his head a little bit. And I just said, you know, you may want to pray about that one. Just step back and pray about that putt. And he said, I don't want to bother God with little things. I said, well, that's not a little thing for you. But then I said to him, what in your life would be big for God? Or too big? You see, there are two contrasting views of God. The one is that God, the theologians would use the word transcendent. He's transcendent, he's otherly, he's a billion miles away, he's powerful, he's strong, he's super intelligent. He put all the stars in space, 300 sextillion. That's our God. And there are others who say, no, God is here. God understands. He hears my prayers. God knows my thoughts. Theologians would call that the immanency of God. So what is he? Is he transcendent? Or is he immanent? You ready to vote? No? If you had to guess, what would you say? You're right. You're right. He's both, isn't he? And aren't you glad you have a God like that? Psalm 113 pulls these two concepts of God together, where it says, first, you are high and lifted up. We hear that all through the scriptures. The train of your robe fills the temple with glory. I'll not share my glory with another. Our God is awesome. He's powerful. Nothing's too hard for him. God, it says in Psalm 113 that he has to stoop down to entertain man in his thoughts. But aren't you glad he does? He goes on to say in that psalm that he hears the cry of the barren woman at night as she has her head on her pillow and says, God, oh, I don't have I want a baby. I want to hold a baby. He goes on to the next verse. It says, he raises the poor from the dust and the broken. The man who's leaned up against a dumpster in an unknown alley with a name that nobody knows but God. God says he raises him up to sit with princes. You have a God who's all powerful, and you have a God who's loving. The songwriter once put the question to words. He says, does Jesus care when I say goodbye to the dearest on earth to me? And the answer comes back, oh, yes, he cares. I know he cares. His heart is touched with my grief. So that's the kind of God we have, a God who is so powerful. Nothing in our lives is too hard for him. And a God who is here and hears our prayers. So if that's the kind of God we have, how does he intervene in our lives? Would you join in your Bibles at Psalm 126? Psalm 126. Let me just give you a little bit of background on that section of the book of Psalms. Psalm 120 to Psalm 134. 15 psalms are called, in fact, you'll see the wording right underneath the number of the psalm. It says song of ascent or song of degrees. You see that there? That wasn't in the original manuscripts, but they're descriptions as they look back. Those psalms are songs that were used for worship and to prepare the hearts for worship, ascending up to Jerusalem in the hill country. So the psalms were sung to prepare. Some think the psalms were sung as the people were migrating to the worship three times a year in the temple. And as they would leave their house, they would sing Psalm 120 and Psalm 121, 122, 123, until they got to Jerusalem to worship. Others think those psalms were used once they got to worship for the 15 steps up to the temple. And as they would stand or kneel on each step, they would sing Psalm 120, 121, 122 to prepare their hearts. I've often challenged people over the years at Woodside that to prepare your heart for worship on Sunday morning, go to bed earlier on Saturday night, but read some of these psalms that will prepare your heart, will show the greatness of our God. Okay? So in Psalm 126, you have two contrasting views of how God intervenes in our lives. The first one we find in verses 1 through 4. Let me read. When the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion, or Israel, and Jerusalem, we were like those who dream. Then our mouth was filled with laughter, and our tongue with shouts of joy. Then they said among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them. The Lord has done great things for us. We are glad. Restore our fortunes, O Lord, like streams in the Negev. As we go through these two contrasting ways, let's just kind of look at, first of all, what was the background? Normally a psalm has a historical background. There's a reason they were singing it. For example, the worship song that you find in Exodus 15. That was a result of crossing the Red Sea in Exodus chapter 14. So they sang a song. What's the historical background, possibly, for the singing of this song? Secondly, let's look at what kind of action did God take here? And third, what was the result? And finally, what's the response? Okay, are you with me? This is all going to be on the test, folks. Okay? So I just read the verses. What could be the historical background for this, for those first four verses? There are a lot of guesses. Perhaps one of them would be the crossing of the Red Sea itself, where, remember, the Jews, the Israelites, came out of Egypt after the plagues. God was working. God was leading the pillar, the cloud, the fire. They got to the edge of the Red Sea in front of them. The Egyptian army now closing in behind them. They're dead. But as Moses reached out his staff under the direction of God and the Red Sea opened up, they walked through on dry land. When the Egyptians came in, you know the story, those walls of water come collapsing down and they're preserved and they sing this song of worship. But God did that. Man could not take any credit for that. God did all the work. That could have been the story. Could have been the story too of Joshua 40 years later as he's leading the children of Israel to cross the Jordan River during flood season. And it's not that wide, but if you've got a million or 2 million people, you got to cross. You got to get to the other side of the promised land. How are you going to do it? And when the priest stepped foot in the water, it opened up and they were able to walk through on dry land. You remember they put the monument there in the middle of the river and one on the other side of the 12 stones to remind them of the greatness of God, That could have been it. To me, it's always amazing, even when God does supernatural things, that man at times tries to explain it naturally. With that miracle, I read one author who said, a liberal author, he said, well, that wasn't a miracle at all, because about 12 miles up the Jordan River, there's a place called a dam, like a dam, really. And the walls of the Jordan would come collapsing down. It's happened twice in history where it shut off the Jordan River. So it wasn't a miracle at all. Or was it a miracle of God's timing? That as soon as the priest stepped in, sometime earlier, 12 miles up there, God performed a miracle. The land was dry land. God worked miraculously. I think the background for this story happened when the children of Israel were under siege by the Assyrians. They were under siege, and the northern tribes had already been taken into captivity in 722 BC. Now the southern tribes, because of their faithfulness to God a little longer, were still in the city of Jerusalem, but all the coastal cities along the plain had already been taken captive. And so now the king of Assyria says, I'm going to destroy you. King Hezekiah, a godly king within the city of Jerusalem, that's all that's left, said, don't. Well, then pay me. So they took silver wherever they could find it, and gold wherever they could find it, even scraping gold off the doors of the temple doors, off the doors of the temple, and gave it to a heathen king so that their lives could be preserved. Finally, the king says, I want bragging rights of that whole area, including Jerusalem. I want it destroyed. So he sent his general down, and the general came down and with his armies, of Syrian armies, and Hezekiah sent a messenger out to meet him by the upper pool, and they had this discussion. And the heathen general said, listen, if you think Egypt is going to come up and save you, Egypt's a has-been. They're not going to do it. If you're relying on Egypt, it's like leaning on a cane and having the point of the cane come right through your hand. You're toast. If you think, by the way, how do you know that your God hasn't sent me to deliver you? And if I don't, and if you're not willing, I'll destroy you. And he was using blasphemous terms about God, and Eliakim, the messenger, came back within the city walls. And by the way, that's all Jerusalem had left. The coastal cities were already taken captive. And an ancient city, the walls made two statements. The walls of a city were the glory of a city. When the walls came down, or if a city didn't have walls, that meant the city was insignificant. So it's the glory of the city, the walls. And it's also for the protection of the city. And so imagine now, moms and dads, young people, you're in the city. Life is normal, and all of a sudden it's not. And the Assyrians are surrounding you, and it's just a matter of time. They're going to choke off water supply, food supply. They're going to come over the wall, under the wall, or through the wall. And your family is going to be separated, perhaps destroyed. Imagine that emotion. Hezekiah the king said to Isaiah the prophet, what are we going to do? Isaiah the prophet went to God and said, God, we got a problem. You ever had that prayer? God, we've got a problem. And God answered the prayer and said, there'll be a rumor of war. Go tell Hezekiah, you're going to be okay. I'm sure Isaiah was excited to go back to the king with the good news. We're going to be okay. Because God's going to deliver us. And it happened just like that. There was a rumor of war in the land of Assyria. The general with all of his armies had to return. And there in one night, the angel of the Lord destroyed 185 of the Assyrian army. The people in the city, filled with joy. Moms and dads and young people, excited and laughing. Perhaps that's the way, the story behind. Now notice the kind of action. Who did it? God. Was it a little bit of God and a little bit of man? It was all God. It was all God. One of the ways God works is to step into our lives, and he does the action, and it's immediate, it's a sudden, and it's amazing. Many years ago, our church sent my wife and I to Hawaii. We never understood the one-way part, but while when we left, we were a little concerned. We'd been away from our kids before, but now they're at the ages where they think they could handle it without somebody coming in to live with them for a week or 2 weeks. We weren't sure. Our son was between his freshman and sophomore year in college, and we had two daughters that were in high school. And so we said, okay, but we were concerned. So we went off to Hawaii, and one day we came back to the room and the red light on our phone is flashing. We have a message, and the message went something like this. Oh, Mom and Dad, I just want you to know we're okay, but we almost died. So that got our attention. So we tried and tried and tried to get a hold of them and just couldn't. We talked to neighbors and just there was no contact, and hours went by, and finally we got a hold of them. And I said, what's going on? Well, my son was taking a trip with our daughter, his sister, to Chicago for the weekend to visit his girlfriend. We knew that was happening. And so he said, Dad, we were driving down the freeway, I-94, and the car was just shaking. It was almost uncontrollable, and things were flying off of it, and we didn't know what to do. So we pulled off on an exit, and there was a little gas station there with, you know, a restaurant attached. And he said, as we drove in, there was a group of guys that were part of an Indy race team. They had all their trucks there, and they came out just having had lunch, apparently. They asked what the problem was, and we described it. And what had happened is before we left town, I had all the tires changed on the car, their car. And they didn't tighten the wheel lugs tight enough. So then it started flying off. And so they diagnosed the problem and went right to work and had the car up and everything changed, and they were on the road in 6.7 seconds. It was amazing. And wouldn't take a dime from my kids. And I think of that. I thought, here we are thousands of miles away, concerned and yet helpless. Parents, this is a wonderful lesson that God had to teach us. Is that when we're not there, he is. When we can't help, he can. But his action was all him, like that. Sometimes that's how God works. And what's the result then of that? The result, if you're living in the city of Jerusalem, it's relief, it's freedom, the burden's gone, it's new life. It's just new life. Some friends of ours had twin babies, and born very prematurely. In fact, we took her to the hospital when those babies were born on a wintry December morning. And one of the babies was flown by helicopter to the University of Minnesota Hospital, where it was for over a month. God bless, the babies survived. And they were even in time able to bring the babies home. About the same time the bills started arriving. $50,000, $100,000, several hundred thousands of dollars. And did I mention they had no insurance? And I can imagine every day these friends of ours, before they went to bed at night, they'd pray, but this burden would be so heavy on them. And one day, in a lifetime, they couldn't pay it off with their jobs. In a lifetime, they couldn't. One day, they got a letter in the mail and said, all of your bills have been paid. That's how God, the result, the burden's off. God worked just like that. the response that you find. Notice the words that are used here. Our mouth was filled with laughter, and our tongue with shouts of joy. And we said among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them. The Lord has done great things for us. Restore our fortunes like streams in the Negev. The Negev, Negev is a Hebrew word meaning south. And it describes the southern part of Israel where they receive very little water every year. About 4 inches a year, but it comes at the same time, at one time. So there are no streams in the desert until the rain hits. We were there a couple of years ago, and the week before that we were there, 11 Jewish school children on a tour or a trip through the Negev were drowned because the rain starts coming. It comes washing down off those slopes into the valleys that were once dry. Yesterday they were dry, and now they're a torrent. Restore our fortunes, O Lord, like streams in the Negev. How does that happen? Like that. Like that. And some of you have stories of how you prayed and God like that. It may have been a near accident on the freeway. And you just say, Lord, help. Like that, the Lord delivered. That's one way God works. That's door number one. Do you like that way? Yeah. Door number two is found in verses 5 and 6. Those who sow in tears will reap with shouts of joy. He who goes out weeping, bearing the seed for sowing, shall come home with shouts of joy, bringing his sheaves with him. The possible background for this story may be the marauding Assyrian armies that would continually come in and do their raids night after night. You never know where they're going to hit, and you always had to be ready. And you'd have your weapons of warfare at that time, you know, by the door, because you never knew. It was just a constant battle. And you find here, it could just be the farming illustration. Any of you farmers? Oh, yeah, great. How about gardeners? You have gardens? You share food with the deer up here? Or else you have a fence around your garden. I grew up in a farm in southwestern Minnesota. And so early in the year, when the frost is up and gone, you want to get into the fields as soon as they're dry enough and prepare the fields for the planting of crops. And you do you're cultivating and all the rest of it, and then you plant. And you plant the rows of corn or beans, whatever it is. And then you do your fertilizer, and then you do your weeding, get all the weeds out as much as you can in the rows. And then you wait. And you wait. And you're going to wait months until the day of reaping. But in that, from the time period when the frost is gone until the time of reaping, there is work, there's weeping, and there's waiting. And then when the time of harvest comes and you get all the product in a truck and it's delivered down to your local granary and they give you a check, and you know that God has worked. But every farmer knows that he can have the best equipment. He can be right on time with the different elements of farming. But he can do it all right, and it doesn't guarantee a harvest. Every farmer knows you got to pray for God to bring the rain and the sun at just the right times. In the Old Testament, it talks about the early rains. The early rains to germinate the seeds, to grow the crops, and the latter rains to take the crops and multiply them. Sometimes that's how God works. He works door number one like that. And we just explain, like, what happened? Are we in a dream? And other times he works through us. And it's time, and it's gradual, and it's weeping, and it's waiting, and it's work. Let me try to illustrate this in a few ways. But notice the response is the same. They're filled with joy. But the joy is not the surprise joy it was over here. Like, are you kidding me? We are like men who dream. They're filled with joy. Our salvation. When God intervened in our life to bring us salvation, was it through door number one or door number two? Did you forget it? Because I can review if you forgot. It's door number one. In other words, who did the work in salvation? It's all God. It's all God. Now, there may have been a time that led up to this where you heard someone share their testimony, you read the Bible, or you listened to Billy Graham. There may have been a year, 2 years, or 10 years where God was preparing your soul. But the actual miracle of salvation was all God, and it was just like that. And so for somebody to say, I've always been a Christian, you don't understand salvation. We were born in this world apart from God. And every one of us needed that time where God interrupts our life and we respond by faith. And it's a miracle. Your salvation is a miracle of God's intervention in your life. May we never lose sight of that miracle. When it happens, we say, wow, we're like men and women who dream. Let's never get over that miracle, ever. Now, the sanctification process of growing to be more like Jesus, is that door number one or door number two? You're right, door number two. Don't you wish it were door number one? That just as salvation took place like that, our Christ-likeness, and we wouldn't have the bad thoughts, we wouldn't have the temper, we wouldn't have the... No, it's in God's... But God says, being confident of this very thing, that he who has begun a good work in you will continue to perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. Sanctification process is God working in our lives, but it also involves God working through us. And it means we're seeking his face in prayer, we're reading the scriptures, we're learning from people, we're worshiping together. These are all part of the process of growing to be more like Jesus. It's gradual. And one day we will see him and we'll be like him like that. What about addictions? I see Oakwood signs all over this place for Celebrate Recovery. All over the neighborhood, I'm thrilled at what you're doing. For the hurts, the habits, and the hang-ups of life. I've known people who have faced their addiction and prayed. And say, God, would you take this addiction from me? And God did just like that. I mean, just like that. And years of a habit stopped immediately. But I've known other people who've prayed for God to remove an addiction and break the chains of a habit. And God worked in their life as they attended a recovery group for 10, 15, 20 years. God works, but in different ways. I've known people who've prayed for a husband or a wife. Sometimes when they pray, maybe a guy's praying for a wife, and he's at a stoplight, and this lady comes and knocks on his window, and he rolls the window down. You know, we don't roll our windows down anymore, do we? Pushes the button, and it comes down, and this lady talks to him, and she says, I think I'm supposed to be your wife. God sent me to you. Does that happen? Sometimes. It didn't happen. Did it happen to anybody here? Not like that, but I mean suddenly. Maybe you weren't even looking. And God says, you need a wife. Here she is. Or a husband. And other times people pray, and God, give me a wife or give me a husband. And God says, why don't you try Christian Mingle? Why don't you help? God will work through us. He will. God always intervenes. I've known people who have prayed for God to deliver them from cancer. And in one story, he was diagnosed with cancer. He went in, and He had procedures done, surgery and all the rest of it, about ready to start chemo, and they began to look and thought, you never had cancer. So they were interviewing him in front of the hospital with the television cameras, the hospital behind him, and the reporter asked the question, are you going to sue the hospital? His response was, how can you sue an act of God? The way he looked at it was God who delivered, just like that. I've known other people who love the Lord just as much who prayed and said, God, deliver me from cancer. And they had surgery and they had chemo and they had radiation and they prayed and their friends prayed. And sometimes they got the word, you're now cancer free. And sometimes we schedule the funeral. And I've learned along the way that God always intervenes. Sometimes immediately, sometimes gradually, and sometimes ultimately. I'll never forget the day I was in the foyer of our church and talking to a man I'd never met before. He said, we've been coming here for a while. He was in his late 30s, and he said, my wife, and he introduced me to his wife, and his kids have been coming. He says, we've all come to know Jesus now. And he says, my mom and dad are coming along with us. I said, that's fantastic. He said, well, we got a problem. My dad doesn't know Jesus, and he's dying of cancer. I said, we need to pray. Later, I talked with him a couple months later and said, how's everything going? He said, well, not so good. You said something in one of your messages that irritated my dad. He's never going to come back again. I couldn't imagine doing something like that. Then he reminded me, my dad doesn't know Jesus and he's dying of cancer. We need a miracle. Later he talked with me, again, probably 2 or 3 months later, I didn't keep track of it, but he talked with me and he said, you know, we got a miracle. Said, well, tell me what happened. He said, we got my dad to come back to church. That was a miracle in itself. An answer to prayer. And then we were in church together, our whole family, in one long row. And the worship leader encouraged us between songs to reach out to those around us and greet them in the name of the Lord. And he said, the man who was standing in front of my dad turned around to shake his hand, and it was his oncologist. He said, my dad just wept. That was the miracle. And the whole family wept. Now, the deists would have us believe that was a coincidence. And I didn't know that oncologists even went to our church. But of all the campuses and all the services and an auditorium that seated 2,600, God placed this oncologist in the seat in front of a man who needed to sense his presence. God's presence. Shortly after, his father was saved, came to know Jesus. And it wasn't long after that, we had a funeral. God intervenes in our lives. We must never forget it. I was talking to people between the services today, sharing stories, and one lady shared with me, it was phenomenal, it was just a story of God's intervention. And she said, that's happened so many times in our lives. And I made the comment, and those are the ones you know about. Right? Someday, we're going to find out all the ways God intervened in our lives that we didn't even know about at the time. It could be wonderful. But she said this. She says, I'm writing them all down and sharing with my children and grandchildren. That's what Deuteronomy talks about. To share with the next generation and the next generation the wonderful deeds of the work of God. Can I ask you a question? You have to vote on this. Everybody's got to vote, okay? Everybody. What would be your preference for God's intervention in your life? Door number one, where he works quickly, suddenly, dramatically, and it leaves you breathless, and you can't help but just say, are you kidding me? God is awesome. I could have never imagined that. Did it like that. Or would you rather have him work through you, where you're working, you're weeping, and you're waiting? Are you ready to vote? How many want door number one? Okay. Can't vote twice. How many want door number two? Yeah, I think we're evenly split. I can tell you, folks, in my life, I've prayed for door number one. But 100 times more often, God has intervened through door number two. I remember the frustration of being in a Bible college and listening to fellow students say, I got to have $710.12 to pay my bill or I won't be able to take midterm exams. And then they say, I went to my post office box, and would you believe it? There's a check in there for $710.12. And for 4 years of college and then seminary and grad school, there was never anything in my box, ever. But God always gave me a strong back and a good mind to hold jobs, to pay bills. God always intervenes. We must never say, here, I did this. This is a business I built. The very next psalm addresses that, where it says, unless the Lord build a house, they labor in vain that build it. Unless the Lord guard the city, those who guard the city guard it in vain. That whatever we do in our working, waiting, and weeping, it's still God. It's still God. Or there's no harvest. There's none. Well, I've prayed for this, and it's happened at times. Most of my life has been God's intervention this way. If God had always answered this way through door number one, I would know his power. But perhaps I'd get so used to it, I would lose his awe and wonder. If God always answered this way, I would never have learned some of the lessons about God that I needed to learn. I know his power here, but I needed to know his long-suffering and his patience and his kindness and his compassion. I would never have felt his hug. I would have seen his power. If he had always answered that way, I would never have my faith muscles stretched. I would never grow. I'm so glad God has intervened. Whether it's door number one or door number two. I know I'm speaking to a lot of us today who perhaps are in the need of an intervention from God. And may I encourage you, God does what he wants. His ways aren't our ways. And it's not wrong to pray for door number one. But if God so leads in another way, just know he's working. When you can't see him, and when you cannot hear him, he's working in your life, and someday all the pieces are going to come together. But don't give up. Learn. Learn and grow to be like him. May I encourage you, you've got a God who's powerful. Nothing's too hard for him. But he's right here with you. Never leaves you alone. Our God and our Father, I just pray today for my brothers and sisters here, for all of us who long to see your face, experience your power. But Father, we need to know your presence as you walk with us through life. Father, I pray for some here today who are facing perhaps an insurmountable task, financial, physical, relationship, health. Father, would you in these moments just reinforce your love for them? May they know your presence. May they feel your embrace. And we'll thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.